Good afternoon. Welcome to Embracing the Chase, brought to you by InfinitelyHome.com, the website for first-time and affordable home buyers, Building Fortunes Radio, and Blog Talk Radio. Embracing the Chase is a radio show presenting a unique personal improvement thought which will make your life better and your business grow. We've been talking about truth this week, and today we're going to talk about the different definitions of what truth is. And the first definition is called the coherence view of truth. Now, what that means simply is that a belief is true if it's consistent with other things a person believes. For example, a fact a person believes grass is green is true if that belief is consistent with other things the person believes, like the definition of green, or whether exactly grass exists at all, and so on. It also depends on the interpretation of the main terms in those other beliefs. Suppose you've always lived in a region covered with snow and never saw grass or formed beliefs about this strange plant life. The claim grass is green would not connect with other beliefs because you have no belief that includes the concept of grass. The claim grass is green would be nonsense because it contains a nonsensical term, grass. That is, you've never formed a belief about grass, so there's nothing that makes you think that the statement is true. There are other beliefs which happen. For example, theories like this are described in terms of beliefs. This puts coherence theories in the investigative view of the truth camp. Well, this is because these people who look at it from this point of view can only gain a given belief on other things we believe. We cannot stand outside our own belief system to compare our beliefs with the actual world. If I believe Booth shot Lincoln, I can only determine if that belief is true based on other things. I believe, like Wikipedia provides accurate information, or my professor knows history and communicates it well, or Uncle John sure was a scoundrel. Anyway, these are beliefs and serve as a basis for the original belief. The truth is essentially investigative, since any other model requires a type of access to the real world we simply can't have. You know, you can basically phrase it like this. If belief is a test of truth, there is a direct connection with investigative work, for we have reason to believe that many of our beliefs agree with many others, and in that case, we have reason to believe many of our beliefs are true. Okay, that's acceptable. You like Christmas. Christmas is good. You believe Christmas is good because all of your Christmas experiences have been good. But if your family had been slaughtered on Christmas Day, you wouldn't be celebrating Christmas when it came around every year, because the pain that you experience would change your belief, and Christmas would not be good at that point in time. So that's what gives you that variable in truth that most people don't understand. Somebody says truth is truth. Yeah, well, it's not. You know, and the simple fact is that if we, in fact, don't explore the options that are available to us, don't ask questions when somebody makes what they term a truthful statement, then it's on us, because we haven't done our investigative work to determine what their statement was based on. if that's the way we believe. There's also what's called a correspondence theory of truth, and this is probably the most widely held view of truth because there's a broader rational tradition in it. It's basically established because philosophers argued that there is a world external to our beliefs that is somehow accessible to the human mind. More specifically, they believe that there is a set of truth-bearing representations or propositions about the world that line up with reality and states of affairs in the world. And a state of affair is just a particular way the world or reality is. So when a proposition aligns to the world, the proposition is said to be true. Truth on this view is that type of relationship. Take this proposition. The Seattle Seahawks, won the Super Bowl in 48. Super Bowl 48 in 2014. The proposition is true if, in fact, Seattle did win the Super Bowl 48 in 2014. They did, by the way. And false if they didn't. Note that on this view, propositions about reality are different from beliefs we may have. We believe propositions. I believe that the moon has craters. What follows that is meant to signify the proposition that a person believes. So truth on this view is when the proposition matches reality. It only lays out the condition for truth in terms of propositions and the way the world actually is, and the definition does not involve beliefs that people have. Propositions are true or false, regardless of whether anyone believes them. Just think of a proposition as the way the world could possibly be. The Seahawks won Super Bowl 48, or the Seahawks lost Super Bowl 48. Both propositions possibly are true. True propositions are those that correspond to what actually happened. You'll notice that this definition does not include a belief component. That is, unlike the coherence theory, this correspondence theory describes truth in terms that are independent of beliefs we may have. This has the distinct advantage of separating truth from the messy business of belief and knowledge, but may warrant complaints about it being impractical. Next we have, and finally, the postmodernism and truth. And postmodernism covers a wide range of theoretical area, but informs modern investigative, particularly when it comes to truth. Postmodern theories are difficult to articulate in strict terms because postmodern theories tend to blow off hard and fast definitions. But we can provide some insight here. Put in simple terms, they describe truth not as a relationship outside of the human mind that we can align belief to, but as a product of belief. And I know we're getting really screwballed right now, but hang with me, I'll give it to you. We never access reality because we can never get outside of our own beliefs to do so. Our beliefs function as filters that keep reality, if such a thing exists, beyond us. And since we can never access reality, it does no good to describe knowledge or truth in terms of reality because there's nothing we can actually say about it that's meaningful. Truth, then, is built by what we perceive and ultimately believe. You know, I'm inclined probably to earmark the foundation of postmodern thought with the work of Immanuel Kant, especially with his work. he gave a critique of a book called The Critique of Pure Reason. And in my view, he was the gateway of postmodern thought. And he wasn't a postmodern himself, but provided the framework what later developed. And he makes a foundational distinction between the objects of subjective experience and the objects of reality. And he labels the subjective experiences as phenomena and the objects of reality as noumena. The noumena for Grant are things in themselves. These exist outside of and separate from the mind. This is what we might call reality, or actual states of affairs similar to what we saw in the correspondence theory above. But for Kant, the noumena are entirely knowable in and of themselves. However, the noumena give rise to a phenomena, or are the occasion by which we come to know the phenomena. The phenomena make up the world as we know it, the world for us. This is the world of rocks, trees, books, tables, and any other objects we access through the five senses. This is the world of our experience. This world, however, does not exist apart from our experience. It is essentially experiential. And Gant expressed the ideas followed. The world as we know it is phenomenally real, but transcendentally ideal. That is, things that we believe exist in the world are a real part of our subjective experience, but they do not exist apart from that subjective experience, and don't transcend the ideas we have. And the noumena are transcendently real, or they exist in and of themselves, but are never experienced directly or even indirectly. So let's look at a couple of examples. Let's look back at the apple. You see a specific color and shape, and you can pick it up and feel its weight and bite into it and taste it and know that it's sort of sweet and maybe a bit sour. These are all your experiences of the apple. And these experiences do not tell us much about the real apple. After all, how could we know that our experience is of the real apple? Perhaps another person would see a slightly different color when she looked at the apple. Or if you just had something very sweet, the apple will taste more sour. But if you have something very sour, the apple might taste more sweet. So what is the real flavor of the apple? I would agree that this isn't a good question, since we can never get beyond the subject and the subjective experience to answer it. Rather, we can say that the phenomena, the colors, shapes, and tastes that we experience is for us a very real thing. And that should describe the apple in just those terms. I can say the apple tastes sweet to me, but I can't really say the apple is sweet, since it's not possible to actually know anything beyond the subjective. The noumena are given form and shape as categories of the mind, and this ordering gives rise to phenomenal objects. This is where it relates to truth. Phenomenal objects are not analogies, copies, representations, or anything such as that. The noumena gives rise to the phenomena, but in no way resembles them. Scholars have spent countless hours, and boy, they don't have much of a life, trying to understand this point, since it seems like the mind interacts with the noumena in some way. But according to Kant, the mind never experiences the noumena directly, and the phenomena in no way represents the noumena. So, we're going to take a quick break right here, about 45 seconds. And when we come back, we'll talk about that noumenal world.
Do you want to learn more about affordable home ownership and what Ed Robinson with the National Affordable Home Ownership Coalition nonprofit has going on in the Sarasota, Bradenton, Florida area? Well, go to infinitelyhome.com and read all about it. Don't forget to go to the events page for upcoming seminars in the area, and the newsletter can be found on the Home Sweet Home page. See you on the website, which once again is www.infinitelyhome.com.
Hey, welcome back. Let's suppose you have an experience. It's your wedding night. And up until this point in time, you've never experienced sex. And so now you're going to find out what it means. From a truth situation, what sex is all about. But wait a minute. We've got some problems. Because now we can see the beginnings of this type of thought. If we understand the noumena as reality and the phenomena as the world we experience, we can see that we never get past our experience to the reality itself. It's not like a photograph, which represents a person, and by seeing the photograph, we can have something, some understanding of the real person. Rather, and I admit it's a clumsy example, it's like being in love. We can readily have the experience, sexually, emotionally, and we know the brain is involved, but we have no idea how it works. By experiencing the euphoria of being in love, we learn nothing about how the brain works. I don't think we're ever real concerned with that, but on this view then, what is truth? Abstractly, we might say it's found. Truth is found in the noumena, since that's reality. But with Kant's idea and taking it a little bit further, we can argue that since we can't say anything about the noumena, why bother with it at all? I mean, he didn't provide a good reason to believe the noumena exists, but seems to have asserted its existence because, after all, something was needed to give rise to the phenomena. And he just got rid of this extra baggage and focused solely on what we experience. But, you know, to me, there's a difference there. Because to me, you have perspective and you have truth. And everyone's experience in the world is a little bit different. I mean, we all have different life experiences, background beliefs, personalities, and dispositions, and even genetics that shape our view of the world. This makes it impossible to say that we are going to declare an absolute truth about much of anything, since our view of the world is a product of our individual perspective. Some say that our worldview makes up a set of lenses or a veil through which we interpret everything, and we can't get past that. Interpretation and perspective, key ideas in our thought, and are contrasted with simple seeing. On a purely objective view of reality level, people who believe this way reject it all as impossible. We only have interconnected beliefs, and for each individual, that's what truth is. We can see some similarities here to the coherence theory of truth with its web of interconnected and mutually supported beliefs, but where the coherence theory holds that coherence among beliefs gives us reason to hold that what we believe corresponds to some external reality, the postmodernists reject that. In postmodernism, there is nothing for our beliefs to correspond to, or if there is, our beliefs never get beyond the limits of our minds to enable us to make any claims about that reality. To me, to give you a more pragmatic look at it, remember the series Star Trek, and you had Spock, and you had Captain Kirk. And these were people whose realities were totally different. Jim Kirk was a person of the here and now. If he didn't experience it, it didn't exist. And for him, Spock was the perfect counterbalance, because Spock gave voice to all the options available. And because his mind had potential much greater than Kirk's, he was able to see past Kirk's limitations and discern a different truth. And to me, that helps me understand it better, and it helps me understand the difference between interpretation and perspective. Because interpretation by Jim was not the same as by Spock. Hence, when they perceived what they wanted to see, that perspective was totally different. So at the end of the day, what have we got? We've got, what is truth to the individual? That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about a staid set of rules that are copied. You know, there are religions that say it's our way or the highway. But religion probably is the greatest variable that we have out there, because religion, in fact, is based on how we believe and how we understand. The people who are in Catholicism or Judaism, which is very much based on the written word and how they've interpreted that written word for their particular religion, have distinct beliefs about this is how we work. And they have the advantage of saying that if you do something wrong, because you don't have the understanding of truth that somebody else does, then that's okay. Because you can walk away from it with a sense of forgiveness, which is another truth altogether. And so what we end up with are people, especially in those two major faiths, probably, although I don't know as much about Muslim religion as I should. You know, the simple fact is that they're all basically the same. They all have a deity, and that deity is the all omnipotent deity, and so if it says it, it's got to be true. But what we believe as another branch of Christianity, or another branch of religion, might be completely different. I mean, I don't believe that you need, if you want to talk to God, I don't believe that you should have to go through an intermediary. But they all do. So, I question in my mind, what is belief? What does it correspond to? Because if our beliefs never get past the limits of our mind, how are we to make any claims about reality at all? It's a very interesting concept, one that we have a tendency to overlook, because we accept the fact that in our judicial system, you promised to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Well, if you did, you'd be there all day long. They don't want your belief. They don't want your perception. They only want what you know is a reality. Because truth is centered only in what an individual experiences in the court system. And by allowing there might be a community agreement for some truth claims, the idea is that two or more people may be able to agree on a particular truth and form a shared agreement that a given proposition is true. Well, to be clear, it's not true because they agree it maps or corresponds to reality. But since the group all agree that a given proposition or argument works in some practical way, or has explanatory power, or has strong intuitive force for them, they can use this shared agreement to form a knowledge community. Oh, wait a minute, that might be the jury. And when you think about it, this is how things tend to work. A scientist discovers something she takes to be true and writes a paper explaining why she thinks it's true. Other scientists read her paper, run their own experiments, and either validate her claims or are unable to validate her claims. These scientists then declare the theory valid or significant, or give it some other stamp of approval. And in most cases, this doesn't mean a hill of beans. But and unfortunately, the theory is immune from falsification or to being disproved. But it's not, because it's not absolute. It just means that the majority of the scientific community who studied the theory agree that it's true given what they currently understand. That's called communal truth. And it's essentially what our jurisprudence system is based on. Because there's 12 people sitting there, all coming up with the same agreement of guilt or innocence based on the information that they heard. It's why they're so selective when it comes to experience. And if you've been murdered, if you're doing a murder trial, they want to know if you've had experience with murder, whether you were a victim of it, whether you experienced it in a closely held way by a family member. It's going to affect how you view it. And one side wants it to view one way, and one side wants you to view another. But think about that. Think about truth in terms of the judicial system. Because unfortunately, that's what we're left with. And with what we've talked about the last 2 days about the different kinds of truth, how do you arrive at a not guilty or guilty verdict? Because the reality is that you don't have all your facts in place, and you never will. It's kind of the best of both worlds, or the worst, depending on how you look at it, on which side of the table you're on. That's how it is. This is kind of like wisdom. And you're kind of like a philosopher. And so we're just sitting there, sitting around the fire, talking and spouting ideas. And that's what it's all about. But the reality is, not the truth, but the reality is that we have a long way to go toward understanding truth. This is Ed Robinson. I will be here tomorrow. That you can put in the bank. And we'll talk a little bit more on the subject. You have a good day.